You're tuned to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Lisa Young. On today's program, we highlight two farms in the North Fork Valley that participated in this year's Mountain Harvest Festival farm tours held the last weekend in September. First, we hear from Tiffany Savarese, co-owner of Osito Farms on Rogers Mesa near Hotchkiss, Colorado. The orchard supports wild permaculture while producing high-quality, high-altitude fruit. After the break, we'll visit with David Miller, co-owner of Western Culture Creamery, just outside of Paonia, Colorado. Tiffany, tell me what Osito means. It has a special meaning.
It does. Thank you for asking. Osito is Spanish for little bear. And the orchard was named after the bears that come down out of the high country into the orchard in the fall to fatten up. And we have a symbiotic relationship with them as best we can.
Tell me about the farm. I understand that this is organic certified orchard and vineyards. So tell me a little bit about that and the process and why that's so unique and important here in the valley.
So I would argue that it's not unique, and that's one of the most lovely things about the North Fork is that we are, I think, somewhat famous for our organic orchards, vineyards, and farms, and that's a really special thing about our valley. So we're just one of many, I think. We're proud to be certified organic. We're also Bee Better certified through the Xerxes Society, so that means that we engage in pollinator-safe practices above and beyond our certification practices for organic, and there goes a honeybee just buzzing the mic. What fun! So we're very proud of the Bee Better certification. It's actually a heavy lift and a lot of work above and beyond what we do for the organic protocol. And we're really proud of the work we do to support pollinators and beneficial insects here.
As I understand it, to be part of this program, there's a certain amount of your acreage or something that you have to set aside. Is that correct? And tell me more about that.
Well, that is correct. You're right up. I appreciate that. So the Bee Better program requires us to designate 10% of our total acreage as permanent pollinator habitat. And so we've got acreage that's set aside. We don't cultivate it. It's not cropped. And we agree not to put any seeds or plants in that area that are non-native to this specific region, so the Great Basin, Southwest Colorado. So everything that's growing in that area is native vegetation, and we do everything we can to support like a balanced habitat for native pollinators in that area.
Where are you located?
We're located on Rogers Mesa, just west of Hotchkiss. We're up 3100 Road, about a mile and a half, and like I say, we're the highest orchard up Rogers Mesa, so that's why we're the first stop for the bears when they come down out of the high terrain.
You mentioned that some folks, you talk about allowing the bears and the wildlife to come in and be a part of your process here. And some people are like, well, why do you do that? Tell us why, because I think that makes you very unique.
Oh, thank you. So we believe that basically a balanced ecosystem includes not only beneficial insects and pollinators, but also the native wildlife that is from this area. So that's everything from bugs and then just go up from there. So everything from toads, birds, rodents and other wildlife, all the way up to the megafauna like deer, mountain lion, and bear. So we're big believers in that. We believe that all of that wildlife is contributing to the soil diversity, which ultimately contributes to healthier trees and better tasting fruit. I think permaculture is a really hot topic right now. A lot of folks will come in and ask us, oh, do you graze sheep? Do you do other permaculture practices? And ultimately, what we think we're doing here is kind of a wild permaculture. So instead of bringing in non-native livestock and creating a permaculture environment here, we are trying to coexist along with the native flora and fauna and find a way to make that happen as a form of permaculture.
Tiffany, we're standing in one of your orchards. Just tell me a little bit about it, what kind of orchard we're in, and then let's talk about the ground cover and just kind of give folks a visual of where we're at and what it looks like right here today.
All right, so we're actually standing in my very favorite part of the orchard. These are old growth apple trees. These were planted before I was born. We're probably one of the few orchards left with full-size apple trees. it just, you know, you can actually hear the life buzzing while we're out here in these great big trees. It's really my favorite place to come walk when I'm not working, let alone when I am working. The cover crop that we're looking at is a custom mix for our orchard. So the goal in our orchard is to always have something blooming somewhere in the orchard for the pollinators. And so what we're seeing at this late point in the season is a lot of red clover pop up. And then in addition, we've got the orchard grass, which kind of knits together and helps us with weed control. We don't spray any chemicals for weed control in our orchard. So what we're looking at, this really soft, beautiful cover crop. It's a soft green grass that's actually providing a weed control by knitting together. And then what's currently blooming is that clover, and we're watching bees buzz us as we talk.
As far as agritourism, that I've been really getting into that more recently with our Farm Friday. I'm curious about what you do that is would go under the term as agritourism.
So at this point, I would say there's two things that we do regularly. Technically the Mountain Harvest Fest farm tours would also count. We've got locals who come and see us during the tours every year, which I love to see. And we also have people that are coming in from Denver and parts far out away from the valley and touring the orchard. And that's lovely. They bring really great and interesting questions. But throughout the season, we do have a couple of glamping tents. And so people can come and stay with us for a night or for the weekend and experience the orchard as guests, nightly guests. This is our second year of having the farm stand, or we're starting to call it a farm store as it grows beyond just our fruit in there. And so we're very excited about that. It's kind of a community store. It's on our system, and folks really love coming in. They leave us notes, send us love. And this year we're really excited to become a farm stand that's actually supporting other North Fork growers. I think all of us growers know how hard it is to find good solid relationships and places to sell our food that we grow. And we just wanted to be able to hold space for other growers to be able to price things as they see is appropriate, which is a tough thing with growing food is, you know, I mean, the markets are tough and the prices that we're held to are tough. And so we had this little building already. We had our fruit in there, but we had lots of extra space. And we thought, why don't we hold space and allow space for other growers and producers and even makers to come in and sell their stuff as well in a sort of retail environment and price it, you know, however they deemed it's appropriate. And the community has been really excited, which is fun to see. Every time I get a chance to be up here and not in the trees, I get really lovely feedback and people have really embraced it. And that's a lot of fun for us.
Tell me what you're growing out here and then we'll talk about your grapes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for asking. So we're a pretty diverse farm. We are tree and vine farm. We start, our earliest crop is sweet cherries. In the years when the cherries come for us all and don't freeze out. So we have sweet cherries. We also have tart cherries. Those are usually coming around the 4th of July. Couple weeks later, we're coming into early peaches. So we've got a big mid-season peach crop that comes in. And then right on the heels of the peaches come in the plums, grapes, and apples. So this time of year where we're talking is arguably the very best time of year in orchard country, because that's when our plums, our apples, our sweet grapes, which is probably what we're most known for here, are all overlapping, and there's lots to eat.
a lot of good eating. And I saw on the website that you mentioned you have 17 varieties of grapes. Do I have that right? So how many acres does that take up?
That is right. Yeah, absolutely. So we have 5 acres of grapes right now. And yeah, we have 17 varieties. And we always tell people, whether I meet someone in the farm stand or out at a farmer's market, we don't grow any grapes that taste like grocery store grapes. I always say our grapes taste, this is a thing that the best way we can describe it in shorthand is I think our grapes taste the way our grandparents probably remembered grapes tasting back when each grape had a really unique and interesting and fun flavor that was all its own instead of tasting like tangy water and skin.
Yeah, Tiffany, what else can you tell me about Osito Farms that we haven't already talked about? And then how folks get a hold of you and kind of your season, because I think you guys are pretty seasonal here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we usually open up to the public around the time cherries are coming in July. It might start skewing a little bit earlier since we're hosting other growers in our little farm stand, but it is still seasonal. So it's as soon as things start coming up in the valley, coming out of the ground in the spring or early summer. And then we've typically stayed open until Thanksgiving at the farm stand. We're very passionate and very proud of what we do in terms of biodiversity and supporting a top to bottom permaculture that embraces wildlife rather than constantly being against it, trying to eradicate it, trying to kill it, spray it out, and all the things.
Just as we're standing here, I'm noticing your drip line for irrigation. So tell me a little bit about that. And then I think you guys are also doing some solar out here. So there's a lot going on out here, people. This is just an amazing place. So tell me about your irrigation and solar.
Oh, thanks for noticing. So our entire farm is under micro spray. So that's why we're seeing these suspended lines that travel through the trees. And then between each tree, there's a drop down line with a spinning head at the bottom. So when this block that we're standing in fires up, each one of these heads spins and spits out a circle or a radius, an umbrella of water under each tree. And that's actually how our orchard is supporting a cover crop like this. So through the entire alleyway, we're standing in the middle in between the two rows of trees, and the entire alleyway, including under the trees, is this really lush bee-supporting cover crop, and that's courtesy of these micro sprays. If we were running a drip system, this would be bare dirt, or we'd struggle more with weeds because you'd have a section that would be bare and not getting any of that irrigation water. The micro spray system is considered a water-wise system. It drastically reduces water usage compared to flood systems and other older models of irrigation. And so that allows us to be able to irrigate all 30 acres from the time water starts flowing in the spring all the way to about Halloween.
And then on the solar, are you using some solar? And tell me about that, what you're using it for.
Yeah, so from where we're standing here, you can see this big open barn down at the end of our driveway. And on top of that, entire structure is covered in a solar array. And so that solar array's primary purpose is to power our cooler. So we have a large walk-in cooler that holds basically our entire apple crop can fit in there when the apples come in. It holds, gosh, 40 tons of fruit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a large walk-in cooler. And needless to say, it draws a lot of power, especially when we're pushing 100 degrees in the summer and that thing's cranking and keeping our fruit clear down just above freezing. And so the purpose of the solar array is to offset the power usage on that big cooler. It does exactly that. Our cooler and the power draw associated with it is completely covered by that solar array. And in fact, then in the winter, when the cooler is shut down and we're no longer storing fruit, we're actually feeding power back into the grid. And needless to say, it's quite a bit of power. It's enough power to keep that big beast running in 100 degree heat at 33 degrees. So all these sunny winter days, that solar array continues to generate power and send it back to the grid.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you guys get a little bit of money for that? Do you get a credit? I mean, that's great.
Yeah. Exactly. So in the wintertime, we're accumulating credits, and that's part of what helps us offset that cooler in the summertime.
People who want to know who you are, get more information, you guys have a really good website, so let's talk about the website.
Oh, that's really kind of you. Thank you so much. So our website is ositofarms.com. It's exactly the same as our name. And there you can find more information about our farming and the way we do things, well as the Airbnb if you're interested, and more about our fruit and our ripeness schedule for everything that we bring in. So it's a great place to start. And of course, you can contact us through the website or also just drop by the farm stand and come see us.
You're listening to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. We just heard from Tiffany Savarese, co-owner of Osito Farms on Rogers Mesa near Hotchkiss. Coming up, we visit with David Miller, co-owner of Western Culture Creamery, just outside of Paonia, Colorado. The local creamery provides fresh artisan goat cheeses and so much more.
So we're a Western Culture Farmstead Creamery. And what actually that means is we are a farmstead creamery, meaning that the livestock are on premise here. They're milked in the facility right here. The cheese is made in this facility as well. Most cheese production, the milk is being trucked in from either a cooperation of different dairies in the area, or maybe they have livestock and it's off the where they produce the cheese. This is very much an old world way of making cheese, in the sense that everything is right here and we provide all of our own milk and stuff. So therefore, it allows us to really handcraft the cheese exactly how we want to. It allows us to have complete control over the health and the nutrition of the goats, to make sure that they're bringing in beautiful milk for us to make cheese with. And then the connection we have with the livestock, with the cheese making, there's not too many layers between it. And I think that's important, you know, just for the fact that we don't lose connection with those things. I think the bigger you get, and the if you push the livestock off and have just cheese production one place and stuff, you start kind of losing control of exactly, you know, what you're producing. And there might be so many hands involved with it that they're not, you're losing control. Western culture is a play on words, and the fact that we're in Western Colorado, and culture is, it's what makes cheese cheese.
And when did you start the business?
We started 10 years ago. We came out here in 2015 from Boulder, Colorado. My wife had been taking cheese making classes and decided, hey, why don't we make cheese and do this ourselves and sell it at a farmer's market. We were both very naive to this because neither of us had grown up with farming and animals and animal husbandry and commercial dairy, that sort of thing. So within that naive nature, we were like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's go for it. And so one thing led to another. We were looking around almost the entire state of Colorado for properties. And then we found Paonia, and couldn't have been happier. This was a blank slate, our farm. And so it allowed us to develop everything and basically kind of build it as we thought fit. In the same sense, we were also learning a ton. We didn't have any resources to really go to as far as the livestock or as far as any of the equipment that's making the cheese and that sort of thing. So we had to learn how to do our medical procedures. We had to learn how to build fencing. We had to learn how to repair pumps when they go down and all that sort of thing. And it was a lot of YouTube and a lot of research, but we made it through. Every year since has been a growing experience. We develop our systems a little better season after season. So we started in 2015 with 14 goats, and they arrived with four goats being in milk, meaning they had just kitted and they were producing milk. So the next morning got very real for me. I had four goats to milk, and this is something I had never really done before. About 3 months prior to moving here, I volunteered at a goat farm, but I was just cleaning up the paddocks and stuff, so I wasn't really too involved. So, and then fast forward it to now, I've delivered well over 700 kids. We have about 56 goats on the property right now. We milk 28 of them twice a day. So, we've definitely moved and expanded and kind of formed this vision. I kind of look at it like if I'm swimming from the United States to Europe and I'm more than halfway there, turning around, coming back is not an option right now.
Yeah.
So we're in. And
very invested.
We're very invested.
Yeah. Tell me about how many acres you have here, and also you grow your own hay for the goats as well.
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have about 5.5 acres here. I have about 3 acres in hay fields around. When we moved here, these were horse pastures. We redeveloped them to grow hay and such, and then that's what obviously we feed our goats to. But I do have to supplement with hay that I buy locally as well, just because goats don't graze, they browse. And so they're very picky about where they eat out in the pasture. They have access to the pasture right now, but they're back there eating hay. We've developed into the hay fields and such. And in the last 3 years, I have not cut hay. I'm doing rotational grazing, or say browsing with the goats. So we move them from paddock to paddock using electrical fencing. And so we kind of keep them in areas and let other areas rejuvenate and then bring them to another area. And this also keeps down the effect of worms and parasites, because if they've been overgrazed in one area, we move them to a whole fresh area so they're not, you know, getting themselves into trouble by eating something that they shouldn't be eating. And it's mostly a worming thing. That's probably our biggest health issue that we deal with. Same with cattle and horses. You know, you deal with the same things.
Tell me a little bit about opportunities for people to do some fun things out here, some volunteering that takes place. A lot of people get really excited when they get the opportunity. I think it's kind of in the springtime that this happens.
Yeah, so we started breeding now. The gestation for a goat is 150 days, roughly. And so that makes our kidding season come about, late February and into March. We'll have about 30 or so goats that will breed this season. Now, once the goats are starting to get born and everything, we've been closed for a couple months at this point because, well, they're not producing milk, so we're not producing cheese, and we're giving everyone a little bit of rest for the moment. But once spring comes, that's when these volunteer opportunities come up. We organize our bottle feeding program to invite the community and anyone who's interested to come over, and we feed three times a day, and this usually starts about March. And that would be 7 o'clock in the morning, noon, and 5 p.m. in the evening. We'll have up to, 60 or so kids to feed. So there's plenty of bottles that have to be cleaned and refilled, and they're measured out. And we have to separate certain kids depending on the groups that when they were born and what stage they're in as far as drinking and stuff. And then we rely on our community to help us with that. And so there's bottle feeding. And then we have a number of volunteers who have been with us for years who have stepped up and do things like help us with cleaning bottles and help us with just some of the chores that go around the whole bottle feeding system. The reason we do that is, we need the milk to make cheese. So we end up feeding the kids a mixture of goat milk and also cow milk that we get from the grocery store, which is perfectly safe for them. And so they're grown up on both cow and goat milk. And the bottle feeding lasts for about 12 weeks, but it staggers out because of the births. And so we usually end up done about the end of May, beginning of June. And then we're actively selling the goats at that point as well. And then other volunteer things we have going on, people come over and help us with mucking, you know, just cleaning up in the paddocks and such. We do have a couple employees that work with us as farm hands, and one doubles as a cheesemaker as well. So, there's plenty of opportunities for volunteering, with especially during kidding season. And the big thing is, it really just, we've seen children who've grown up with our goats, and they've, you know, had this amazing experience of understanding livestock and understanding animal husbandry and understanding where their food comes from, you know, which is really important. It brings to mind during the pandemic when children weren't going to classes, they weren't going to play groups. We had two families that came here every day at 5 o'clock to help with bottle feeding. And it was the two kids at the time were in kindergarten and first grade. And that was their time to enter, you know, to mingle with other kids and to make friends and to have fun and to not, you know, be so secluded and everything due to pandemic.
Yeah. We're doing the interview this morning right in front of your store, so maybe tell me a little bit about the store, and I'm assuming there are other places that people can get your product, but let's just talk about the store for right now. Tell me about it.
So the store was kind of an afterthought. We didn't really think about that we wanted to have a store here, but we realized being located right off of Matthews Lane here in Paonia, we have a lot of traffic coming back and forth. You know, not busy by any means, but a lot of exposure and such. When we built the dairy, this used to be a garage, and we had it contracted out to build the dairy, and then we had this room or this area up front here, which we made into our farm store. We were open every day of the week from 9 to 5, and recently, we decided to close on Tuesdays and Wednesdays just to get a little balance, because it's basically just my wife and I who run this. And so we're working a lot every day. So this gives us a little balance to our lives. We sell all the cheeses that Sue Ann produces in the farm store, as well as some that we don't offer for wholesale. So you'll find cheeses like the Manchego and the Chèvre rolls that we don't sell for wholesale. So you can always find some different cheeses here that aren't normally offered, you know, when you go to a store or whatever to find our product. And the store has been wonderful because it's really allowed us to insert ourselves into the community, get to know people. We definitely have regular customers and such. And then the goats are a big thing in the sense that it's part of our agritourism. It's part of the attraction of it all. We encourage people to mingle with the goats. We walk them out there. We tell them the do's and don'ts when they're with the, either the kids or the adult goats and such. And a lot of farms don't necessarily offer that experience, especially stores, you know, and say, oh yeah, go our ice cream shop, go meet the cows, you know. But, and our goats are very socialized. And that's due to the bottle feeding program. So they're very friendly and they love to get petted and stuff. And so people are very surprised on, you know, how socialized the goats are, how easy they are to, you know, talk with and that sort of thing. And then they have the store here, which we have, you know, as well as lotions and soaps that we make out of our goat milk. And then we have crackers and we've had T-shirts and stuff in the past and stuffed animals. So just kind of making it fun.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's really cute. I really am enjoying it. This is Mountain Harvest Festival weekend. What does it mean for you guys this weekend? I think it's probably an increase of a lot of things going on. But yes. How important is it to you and your business?
It's our busiest weekend of our season, so it's very important for our business. We put a lot of energy into this weekend, and we're, you know, usually running around with our heads cut off for the first couple of days before it happens and such. But then we truly embrace it. It's such a fun weekend. It's probably one of my favorite festivals that's in the North Fork Valley here. When we moved here, this was the first festival that we came to. And so we were just like, wow, you know, what a wonderful thing to be a part of. You know, we're seeing the harvest of the farms, beautiful music, I rode in the bike parades and that sort of thing. So it's just a wonderful time. But I like the weather that we have this time of year. I like the community that comes together to go listen to the music or tour the farms and such. And I just like how the North Fork Valley is just opening up because we are a lot of organic farmers, vineyards, orchards, all sorts of things. And to open up and let other people experience that is just magical.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. And I do think we want to mention that you are USDA certified. I think that's important to mention.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about why that is also an important certification.
So every state has different dairy laws. And in the state of Colorado, you can sell raw milk, but you have to sell it at your farm and you have to sell it through a herd share. So you'd basically buy a share of the animal and the farmer would do you the milk for you. But if you're making cheese in the state of Colorado, you have to be inspected by the Colorado Dairy Inspection, which is a liaison with the USDA in order to sell it commercially. You can make cheese, but you can't sell it like we sell it, you know, legally. And I know people do, you know, and that's fine. But it's important for us because it's standards. You know, people think, well, pasteurization is a bad thing. Well, to make cheese, you have to heat up the milk. You know, we have to heat it up to the state's laws for a certain temperature for a certain amount of time. I think it's 160 degrees held at 3 minutes. At that temperature, we can guarantee that things are clean and healthy and they're not going to be harmful.
You've been listening to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. Special thanks to Vincent and Tiffany Severiz of Osito Farms and David and Sue Ann Miller of Western Culture Creamery. In an upcoming Local Motion, we'll visit Elevation Herbal Tea and Fields of Glory as we continue our Mountain Harvest Festival farm tours. Local Motion airs every Tuesday night at 5 p.m. and again at 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings right here on KVNF. You can find all of our past Local Motion episodes at kvnf.org Look for Local Motion under the News tab.